All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Wednesday, October 11th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are from, I just saw the name that you put in our Zencaster chat here. It's inappropriate.
No, it's the name of a popular club that I happen to be a president of, or a local chapter president. But
I'm already distracted and derailed. All right, from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com/NBA. Can we give out that link? Yes, NBA link.
I mean, you can.
Okay, you can go sign up for /NBA for a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. NFL, obviously, NBA too. NBA pricing went up yesterday. We got our first round of projections up. They're not close to audited yet, but you can at least see who's playing on that first Tuesday in NBA, which is coming, you know, less than a week away. So go check that out.
NFL works too, by the way. If you want to look into, go to dfsr.com/NFL. They're both active at the same time. It's just the NBA one will tell you a little bit more about our NBA product if you haven't seen it yet.
Bingo, bango. So there you go. /NFL. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, for a limited time, price is going to go up once NBA season starts. All right, today we're going to talk about some week 6 cash game plays that, you know, ways you can start if you're starting to build lineups on FanDuel or DraftKings, you know, for Thursday game, or then even if you're looking ahead to Sunday, where we think at some positions you're going to see either some safety, some maybe some higher ownership on some players. We'll kind of break it down position by position, and then later in the week, maybe Friday, or I believe Friday, I'll be coming on and doing a game by game breakdown, trying to go a little bit more in depth in some of these games. Because there's actually, when I was writing the plays last night, I did find there was almost too many guys to write up, specifically running back. I'm also going to post a running back sort of primer probably tomorrow or early Friday that breaks down some more of these running backs, because that position, as we get into it, you'll see, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty deep.
It's very deep this week, and with guys all over, all different price points, all different great matchups. So I will go into a little bit more depth between that article and the podcast later in the week. All right, let's get into some of these plays. Now, a couple of these guys we talked actually briefly about yesterday when we were talking, doing our week's 5 recap. But I wrote up a couple quarterbacks here. I think they're kind of surprising. They're not surprising now that we're a couple weeks into, 5 weeks into the season. Going into the season, I don't think there's any chance anyone thought I'd be writing up a couple of these guys for week 6 safety plays. But here we are. This is kind of how the NFL rolls. First guy I wrote up was Alex Smith. Briefly talked about him yesterday in terms of just like what he's doing fantasy production-wise. I believe he's the highest scoring fantasy quarterback on the season so far. Do you think with the weapons he has and sort of the way the KC offense runs, and his price, you know, he's priced a bit below the top tier of guys, do you think he's, quote, safe? And do you think like he's just going to be a somewhat popular play just because of the way he's been playing to start the season?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, between him and Deshaun Watson, who I know is also in the article, Deshaun Watson has actually outscored him just by a hair's breadth so far, but they're effectively tied. 23.4 fantasy points per game for Watson, 23.3 for Smith. But I think they do it in very different ways. Like, I think Smith has one of the more consistent profiles that you could possibly imagine right now. I mean, the completion percentage is simply through the roof, 77%. That's like a when you play a video game sort of thing on the rookie mode. That didn't you complete 77% of your pass attempts? And the fact that he actually has weapons now, I mean, I think he was much maligned in the past for like, they don't even have a touchdown to a wide receiver, rafflecopter, you know, like that kind of thing. And he's just proving that it doesn't matter. I mean, they have an offensive scheme that perfectly suits his skills. He's doing it every single game. He also runs, which, you know, people forget. But when he first came up, I mean, he was seen as a pretty effective running quarterback coming out of college. And, you know, doesn't go off for anything typically. But the fact that he has it in him to go 7 carries for 56 and a touch like he did against Washington means he's got sneaky upside that you just don't see all the time. So, yeah, I really like Smith. I think he's very solid. And really, he's just affordable. I mean, $7,500 is a great price going up against a team like Pittsburgh who has looked pretty spotty at times on defense this year.
No, yeah, they're a slight favorite. I think they're -4 or something like that right now. I do like him. I did a lot of, I'm going to drop some of these numbers in here today on this podcast. I did in the article as well. I ran standard deviations and coefficient of variations for everyone, anyone that mattered yesterday, basically, and then just proceeded to G-chat you.
What's a coefficient of variation, just to let people know?
It's the standard deviation divided by the average amount. Oh, no, excuse me, average divided by standard deviation. Oh, shoot.
Just tell people why it matters.
It matters because I'm getting confused. I'm looking at this list of guys. It matters because it basically is a number that you can look at to show how much a guy variates off of his own deviation. So like standard deviation is good. Basically, is going to show you how your peaks and valleys, let's say for a player for a season, and how much they deviate on a kind of a standard week. The problem with it, looking at it in a vacuum, is that standard deviations are going to be higher for players that just score more points on average, right? So like you can't look at standard deviation across a full spectrum of guys because Aaron Rodgers scores a lot more points than Case Keenum, right? So their standard deviations are clearly going to be different. But what we want to know is, how different are they compared to how they score? So coefficient of variation helps you do that by just basically comparing a guy to himself, comparing his average fantasy points to his standard deviation. The lower the number, the better, right? So, and we do this in our football primer, but I wrote up a thing to start the season on just consistency. Quarterbacks are typically the most consistent, followed pretty far behind by running backs, and then a little bit further behind them are wide receivers, and then tight ends the furthest. So,
and it bears out that way pretty much every year, right? Like on broader trends. So that's nothing. Typically, no.
And Smith comes in with a 0.3 0.3 coefficient of variation, which is very low, but that is somewhere around what the average quarterback. It's lower than average, but it's not elite. Like an elite number would be Aaron Rodgers at 0.13, right? So like that guy just absolutely every single week. Like if you're looking for safety, he kind of does in and out every single week the same exact thing. The problem with rostering him on a week like this is just very, very expensive. Like that's now guys that are going to be that consistent over the course of a season are going to see their prices rise commiserate with it because they're basically good every week, or they're around. They're going to be fair. Let me put it better. They're going to be fairly priced relative to the fantasy production because they just don't have that week, that week where they just take off and the algorithm dips their salary, or the 2 weeks where they take off and their algorithm dips their salary. So anyway,
I will say that they're using coefficient of variation this early in the season. There are problems with using it to project safety going forward. I think you still need to go on the case by case basis to figure out who the good plays actually are or the safe plays. So like take a guy like Rodgers, who I think he actually is very safe because he does it in exactly the same way, which is either throw for 300 yards and a couple touchdowns or throw for fewer yards, but only because he has so many touchdowns because the offense is just killing the other team. So I think you can take Rodgers as very safe. I would compare that to someone, even like Alex Smith or Deshaun Watson as well, where like sometimes it's because they go ham putting up a ton of touchdowns, but sometimes they like run in a touchdown. And I think when you have a lot of moving parts, the coefficient of variation will go up over time, which is to say they'll become more erratic. It's just that through five games, it's such a small sample size that the numbers can wind up looking pretty similar. So,
and the reason you don't want to use this number just as like your standalone number is because it doesn't factor for our cases here. It doesn't factor in who your opponent is or the pace of the game or anything like that.
It doesn't even care about value. It's not even saying you were a good value on your price. It simply means you were consistent.
And that's exactly why I didn't write Rodgers up, even though he has the lowest number. He's $9,000 and he faces a slow Minnesota team. So like at that point, those other factors just outweigh the fact that he is consistent. Because now there's a chance he comes in under whatever that on the lower end of that consistency rating, and then it's just not worth it. So this is all to say that there were some interesting findings. I'm going to get into a little bit more as we get to some of these other plays. Smith is in that consistent range so far to start the season, and that does profile well with just because of what he's done for his career. He's an accurate passer. He does run a little bit, and those two things will help you be more consistent on a week-to-week basis in terms of fantasy because it just gives you more outs in terms of the ways to get your points. Like rather than just being a purely pocket passer where you're going to need to get all your touchdowns kind of just clustered together in a game and so forth. So running, that running quarterbacks do remain more consistent over the course of the season. Watson's in that category too. Now Watson has a higher coefficient variation, but that's a little skewed because his game one, which I didn't filter out, like really throws off because he was kind of bad and like just kind of came in and didn't really do much. And then game two was bad. If you take it over the last 3 weeks, he falls. He's not going to fall in that elite category, but he's going to fall somewhere in that Alex Smith category. They're priced around the same. If you had to pick one to start right now, Watson against Cleveland or Smith against Pittsburgh, Watson is going to cost a little bit more for you. But do you have a gut feeling about which one you'd rather play, one over the other?
I think with a gun to my head, I'd probably just take Smith, just because he's still a more known quantity to me. He's a little bit cheaper. I just look at Watson and I see 4 touchdowns against Tennessee and 5 touchdowns against KC. And I just have an impossible time imagining that that's like really his baseline going forward. Listen, it doesn't need to be. If he's going to average 35 fantasy points a game, like he doesn't, whatever. Like, he doesn't need five touchdowns a game. He could do 25 fantasy points a game and still be an incredible value on these prices. I just see, it's just a newer guy that I don't trust as much. So, yeah, for cash games, I'd say Smith. I think Watson has inarguably the higher upside, though, both on the ground and through the air, it seems. So that's kind of my break right now.
I do think Watson will be higher owned also just because of some narrative piece. He also gets Cleveland, who's absolutely been garbage against the pass this season, yep. 31st in DVOA against through the air. So I do think there's separation to be had on Smith there, especially in cash games, because I don't see their baselines as being all so different. But especially too, because there's some chance with the way these spreads are working out is that Smith is actually just playing in the closer game against Pittsburgh, whereas Watson, there's some chance that you get into blowout territory here, especially with the way the game's coming in through Vegas. I like them both. I like them sort of both for, I mean, around the same reasons, but I'm with you that I'm still a little bit gun-shy about trust when the price goes up. Like, I didn't have this problem at 5,100 on Watson on DraftKings 3 weeks ago because I thought that the price was low enough that it warranted that maybe like some of the risk of the unknown. Now that we get into his pricing in and around his peers, that's where his actual fantasy peers, that's where I start to get a little gun-shy, I think, like you. The last guy I wrote up, Kirk Cousins. Man, the Redskins have an insane total in this game, something like 29 coming in. They're coming in off the bye against San Francisco. 28.75 points, which I believe is about the highest I've seen this year. Maybe there was a Patriot game that was around 29, but you really don't trend in the NFL too often into this 28, 29, 30 point implied total range. With Cousins, I put the caveat here that I saw him more as a pivot. What do you think of him? I mean, he hasn't been like all that good this year, but the matchup seems so great. Whenever you see totals like this, especially for a team that really can't run that much, that does rely on him, how do you think about pivoting toward him?
I wouldn't pivot towards him in cash games for sure. I mean, he scored 12 points in each of his first two games of the season against the Rams and Philly. So it's not like, you know, he was facing the old 85 Bears cliche. He was just facing not so great teams and didn't really do much. And then he was pretty good against OKC or Oakland. No, Oakland and Kansas.
You're in basketball mode.
Well, what the problem was, so check this out. So in those two games, he played Oakland and Kansas City, but I looked at them together and it's Oak and KC. So anyway, Oakland and KC. And I rewrote our ebook for the NFL or the NBA. So you can go check that out at dfsr.com/ebook. That is live right now. So the deal with Cousins is I think he's pretty inconsistent. I think there's good reason for it. I think turning over your whole receiving core and Reed continuing to be banged up means that he's just not going to just dole out the same sort of consistent punishment that he was able to last year. And it's not like he was a huge pedigree guy coming up in the first place. So I start to wonder with guys like him if having a good season is the result of the perfect storm or really growth, and changing everything up has seemed to take a toll on him in basically every statistical category this year, except for interceptions. He's only thrown one of those. So I don't mind Cousins. I think he's a good upside play. I think there's still a chance he's every bit as good as he was in the past. And I think if he can start connecting with Pryor, then you could see some big games out of him. I just don't know that I want to be the one who guesses that it's going to be this week. So I know Vegas really likes it. The total seems super high. I think you can probably get him with pretty good separation given how good he's been so far. And for that reason, I think he is a great play. But yeah, definitely not a pivot for me for cash.
Yeah, no, I hope I made it clear in this that he fell well below the top two guys. But I did see Smith and Watson as kind of the clear plays, and I just wanted to give someone else maybe a little bit lower in salary. Like that. But that's kind of where I saw him, especially with that total. And I do think the Redskins are going to need to. I mean, they've done a little bit more of a backfield thing, especially with Chris Thompson's emergence. But he's really been used in the passing game as well. So Cousins, probably ends up being more of a tournament play, but wanted to write up a third guy. And it was really one and one was Watson and Smith, and then like 2A or something. Like that was Cousins. All right, running back was where I really struggled the most. Not because, you know, there's some weeks you struggle because you're like, who can be the third guy I can write up? This week was like, well, how do we even narrow it down? There was almost too many guys. I could make a case. I really could have probably made a case for almost up to eight guys, and it would have been pretty strong. And I think whenever that happens, you are going to see ownership percentages maybe just all over the place, because there's narratives and game scripts and stats and really just about anything to back up, I mean, no less than like at least six guys. And the thing too is that the six guys you can back up are like all the most expensive ones too. And so whenever that happens, I do think we're going to see a situation where ownership percentages in cash games really on both sites are going to be all over the place. I started with Gurley. This is probably going to be the first place we possibly get a little bit of separation against.
You think so?
rest of the, well, he's coming off. So the reason I think the separation could possibly be there is he's coming off a bad game. And I think that when you have the case where he's coming off a bad game, when you have other guys coming off really good games that are maybe a little bit more expensive than him and also fall into the same usage levels as he does, and maybe even safer usage, because he's also coming off a game where he saw his least amount of touches. I do think that that is where there could be a little problem. Anyway, I started with Gurley. What are your thoughts there? I mean, I can go through some of the reasons why, but do you think, I mean, you kind of disagree, I almost heard you disagree with me right at the start, that you'd think that his ownership levels when I think they'll be lower. Do you disagree with that?
I think they'll be fine. I mean, the fact of the matter is he came off 2 weeks where he had 33 and 30 touches and topped 31 fantasy points in back-to-back games and was excellent in the first two games of the season too. I think he's coming at a price that's too cheap, and the matchup is solid. I think he'll be well-owned. I mean, people like to pay up at running back too. I think it makes sense to pay up at running back this season just because of how erratic it's been. So, yeah, I like Gurley. I mean, I guess that one of the things that could give him some... give people pause is that you have Leonard Fournette right in that same category, and you were telling me yesterday, spoiler alert, that Fournette has been one of the safer running backs, if not this, was it the safest, the lowest overall coefficient of variation?
Lowest coefficient of variation by,
yeah,
by
that's
far.
Pretty nuts, and given the fact that he's basically the same price and they're going off against each other here, maybe people do go in that direction instead. What's your gut tell you there?
Yeah, well, so I'm tempted to say just play them both, right?
Because I
think they both, yeah. So for Gurley, he gets a Jacksonville team ranks 31st in DVOA against the run this season, and that was even with a game where they kind of shut Bell down last week. But now the reason they shut Bell down is because the game got completely scripted away from him to start two pick sixes, and that was really the end of the running game for Pittsburgh. They just simply couldn't afford to keep trying to run. So that game gets a little bit wonky. Even with that game on the resume, they still stink against the run. They're a complete, I've heard the term funnel defense. Defense to describe teams that do one thing great and one thing terrible, and they're the poster child for that theory. And I feel bad because I want to credit whoever came up with that term. I just simply don't remember who it was. I saw it on Twitter, but they're first against the pass and 31st against the rush. Like, this is the exact right. This is the exact scenario you're looking for in terms of targeting a guy. So the fact that Gurley comes in, I mean, really the big thing with Gurley here too is, we don't have, it's not like we haven't projected for, so many more points, or really haven't basically projected in the same realm as Hunt, Bell, Fournette, and himself. It's just that he's cheaper than all of them, right? Like, he's 1,000 less than Hunt, he's 600 less than Bell, I'm talking FanDuel prices, and even just 200 less than Fournette, and those 200, can start mattering really when the pricing gets a little tighter. So, I think I'm hoping no one plays him. I think this is the perfect spot for him. Fournette going the other way. Now, Fournette's weird because he breaks off the 90-yard run to end the game. His coefficient variation would have looked probably different had that not happened at the end of the game. But at the same time, he has the ability to do it. Where do you stand when you see big runs like that early in the season maybe influencing overall stats on a player? Like, do we want to trust it because the usage is there and he just has the ability? Do we want to knock it off the record a little bit because it was like sort of a fluky thing? Like, I don't know. I sometimes don't know how to really break down huge outlier runs like that, or huge outlier plays that just don't stand to be recreated, but also just kind of do fit into the rest of his stats.
Yeah, I would say taking the big plays early in the season with a grain of salt makes sense. But even if you pretend that run never happened, Fournette would still be the league leader in attempts. He would be fifth overall in yards instead of first overall in yards. And he would be tied for the league lead, or he'd be second in the league for rushing. Tied for the league lead in rushing touchdowns. So I still think the profile is basically the same. I mean, and you're not even doing that for everyone else. Like, if you take away everyone's, like the way they do in gymnastics or something, take away the longest run from every guy in the season, I bet he's just right there among the lead leaders either way. So I think it's, it's fine to note it. If it had been the first game of the season and he had 20 carries for 31 yards and then had a 90-yard run, I'd be a lot more concerned. But given the fact that he was mostly having just a fine game and it turned into a spectacular game, I think we still evaluate him every bit as highly, which is to say, he's the most consistent running back in the NFL and probably would be even without that big run, and just the most used. And there's no reason to think that they'll go away from that in this very winnable game against the Rams. So, yeah, I think Fournette is a great play, and I think we're seeing kind of a coming of age of one of the next generation of running backs. Like, I think if Jacksonville's just going to keep giving him this kind of usage, it's going to be really hard for him not to be one of the highest scoring fantasy backs when the season's all said and done.
Right, they just they force feed him the ball. They're going to give him the ball up to 20, you know, 25 times a game happily, and that's not going to change the way their team is constructed. They don't want to spell him. They can't throw at all. So he's just going to keep seeing the rock as much as possible. The Rams 18th in DVOA so far against the run this season, so it's not like they're any great shakes in stopping that. You know, I did misspeak a little bit when I said Fournette was the lowest coefficient of variation. I had only at that point filtered to like the top
among
like
good seven, players.
Yeah. Among the good players, but there were a couple other guys that interesting to bring up here that I think are worth it. Well, one is Devontae Freeman. I didn't write him up. He's actually been more consistent. He's just a lower fantasy points per game. He's in a great matchup as well. Easily could have written him up, just didn't because time and word constraints. Sort of.
It's the same price as those other guys. Are you really going to play Devontae Freeman over Gurley and Fournette? I mean,
and that's
you're going to play the same guy at the same price who scores six fewer fantasy points per game. Just makes no sense.
Right. So you know, that's the reason that I left him off the list there. The other guy that's been really consistent, and I did write him up, and I'm interested in your thoughts on him. I'm going to skip down here a little bit. Is Mark Ingram? So yesterday the Saints traded away Adrian Peterson. That Peterson was averaging like seven touches a game, and those seven touches a game were mostly runs, and those are mostly the runs that Ingram gets, right? Like, so like they have Alvin Kamara there as well, used a little bit more in the passing game. Peterson was in on some passing downs, so it's not a complete comp. But even if you thought that, like, let's say 50% of Peterson's 6 to 7 carries a game go to Mark Ingram, I mean, and he was already, his coefficient variation this season, now again, he was only averaging 10 points a game. His coefficient variation was 0.06. Like,
well, that means he's just in his first three games, he scored exactly 9.6 fantasy points.
Well, that's what I mean. So so here's the thing. His opportunity is consistent, but now he's standing, these two guys, Kamara and Ingram, and again, I believe it more Ingram, because I think that more of the plays that are run to Peterson will be run to Ingram. That's a little bit, I'm guessing at that a little bit. I mean, are we standing to see possibly like, I mean, a 25 to 30% jump in his carries? I mean, for both of them, too. Like, I think we could assign both that kind of jump to both these guys. But that's significant. Like, at this point in the season, when you get, like, that kind of increased... When you get that kind of just maybe increased implied usage for a guy that had been sort of consistent to start the year, do you start to see him wiggle his way into cash games? Again, he's also only 4,400 on DraftKings.
Yeah, DraftKings, I think he's fairly interesting. I mean, he's used in the passing game, not to the degree that Kamara is, but does catch a few balls out of the backfield. I agree with your take that he'll probably get Peterson's carries. Like, Kamara definitely seems more of a third down back that they're looking to use in the passing game. It's a little troubling that Ingram, no touchdowns so far this season. You know, I just don't know if, I mean, certainly so far he hasn't really been involved in the plan in terms of punching the ball in, but he's also had some tough matchups. I don't know, like, I think if you're getting that level of consistent production leading up to this point, it's pretty hard to imagine that this makes his situation worse. And sure, you wouldn't be happy on 10 fantasy points on a $6,000 investment, but if it lets you pay up elsewhere, yeah, maybe it makes sense. It'll be tough for me personally to pull the trigger on that because we have known quantities at other spots. But if I look at it and I'm going to have to play some like $6,000 receiver that I don't like or play Ingram, I'd much rather play Ingram. Like if it were last week, picking between Ingram and say Devontae Parker, I would take Ingram in that spot.
And again, I'm mostly just talking about DraftKings. 4,400 on DraftKings for a guy that could touch the ball 16 times is, to me, near lock it up territory.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point. And also on DraftKings, you get to play three running backs if you want to. So
exactly. Right.
So yeah, that's, I definitely like him on DraftKings. Sorry, I was giving you the FanDuel take.
And then the other side, the FanDuel side, I did put up Javorius Allen. I did skip a guy. I want to go back to the other guy in a second, but I did put up Javorius Allen. This is more a little bit speculative, but at 5,800 on FanDuel, he did see a ton of touches. The Baltimore that we've seen, they only want to run the ball. They do not want to throw it ever. Like they're fine to just run. And if Terrence West were to sit, it would be probably just be Allen and Collins, and I would trust Allen more in that situation. And I really like the $5,800 FanDuel thing, but we're going to wait a little bit to hear about Wes' availability there. I want to go back real quick to CJ Anderson. So CJ Anderson, $7,000 on FanDuel, $6,600 on DraftKings. CJ Anderson is a guy, he's touched the ball. Now they're coming off a bye week. He's carried the ball 20 or more times in three out of his four games. Now,
what about that game against Buffalo? What did he do in that game?
Well, the only week we played him, which was this exact same theory, was that when we played him against Buffalo, of course, when he didn't touch the ball. But 75% of his other games, 75% of the rest of his games, this guy's also in sort of like that elite group of touches against the Giants defense with Giants defenses look bad. The Giants offense we know is going to be complete trash. How willing are we to pivot down to him? At $7,000 on FanDuel, that's a pretty significant savings to be able to spend elsewhere for a guy that could touch the ball 20 to 23 times in a game that really scripts out perfectly for a running back. They're huge favorites at home in Denver. would we be willing to pivot off of guys like Fournette, you know, Kareem Hunt, any of the guys that listed above, Gurley, in favor of getting some savings here with Anderson?
Well, I think from a value perspective, there's no question that it looks like a really good spot to me. I mean, for all the reasons you stated, and like I do think that Jamaal Charles thing was sort of an aberration. It hasn't played out in any other game. I think, you know, you'd be a fool to ignore the risk here, but I think if you just look at the kind of expected value, that Anderson just represents a phenomenal play. Like, are 20 to 25 touches a game for Anderson that much worse than 20 to 25 touches a game for Fournette? I'm just not sure we're late enough in the season to know that. And the fact that you can get $1,600 savings is very, very, very meaningful. Like, we've talked about this in the past, where I think people sometimes, you know, go ahead and misevaluate how big a deal it is to save that level of money. But just the old litmus test of, you could play Antonio Brown or this other guy, that's like going from Antonio Brown to Chris Hogan, you know? And so if you go Antonio Brown and Chris Anderson, or Chris Hogan and Leonard Fournette, or like, that to me seems like a pretty easy one. So, and I called him Chris Anderson, but it's CJ Anderson, not the Birdman, again, in my basketball brain. So, but yeah, so I think when you do it by that test, the old eyeball test of this running back and that receiver, or this receiver and that running back, yeah, I can see a total case for playing him in cash.
Well, very good. An example of a question that we get in our chat room almost all the time, for really any sport, but I'll use the example here because I can almost guarantee we'll get it, is to say, you know, someone will say CJ Anderson or Leonard Fournette, and I'll say, okay, well, they're just different prices, right? So there's another decision there, right? Like, so it's just not, I mean, clearly Leonard Fournette, if you're just like doing like no halftime or something or something like that, where it's just, you know, where you'll need to pick one or the other. Right. But, you know, the people just, you know, or they'll say things like, why is the system like CJ Anderson more than Fournette? Well, it doesn't. It just likes the price on him better. People have a, you know, almost impossible time understanding this concept of like that this, you know, your decisions are going to cascade. And when you get
that's why DFS is profitable, right? Because it's hard, because you have to make tough decisions like that. So yeah, 100%. The people miss out on that. Certainly the casual fans do, but not if you take the game seriously, you can't be making that kind of mistake.
All right, hit us up with a No Halftime sponsor here, and then we'll get into wide receivers and tight ends.
Sure. So NoHalftime.com is a great app for people who want to play one-on-one fantasy contests like we just sort of described, where basically you pick a player, you pick a guy you think your guys can outperform, and you issue the challenge to the world for any amount of money, and then people accept it or they don't. If they don't accept it, you get your money back. If they do, it's game on. So you can go over to NoHalftime.com. You can use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50. So you head over there, check out the challenges that other people have issued, see if you can make any money, and get to work.
All right, so wide receiver, I do think that this week in wide receiver, we see people paying down into the middle tier or lower simply because of the running backs that we listed above. There's just so many good high-priced running backs, high-salary running backs in such good spots that it's going to be real hard to get away from. It's going to be real hard to just get away from that top tier, I think, altogether, right? Like, if you're going to somehow fade the top six highest priced running backs this week, I think you are going to be really biting your nails because they're all just in such good spots. So yeah. I think the wide receiver area, we're going to go a little bit more mid-tier to low, maybe even to lower end, depending on how much we want to spend at the other positions. I wrote up DeAndre Hopkins to start. We talked about him yesterday. He kind of goes along that same narrative that we talked about with Watson. Are we willing to trust that this is the second coming of DeAndre Hopkins, because we're realizing now that maybe he just needed a, you know, the years of Brock Osweiler and Tom Savage and these other guys, it really doesn't seem like it was Hopkins' fault, right? Like, based on what Watson has done this year, are we willing to go up to that $8,000, $8,100 on DraftKings, $8,000 on FanDuel price range for him? Like, is he that kind of commodity at this point, or do we maybe want to allocate those dollars more to running back?
No, I think he is. I think when you see the target share, then that's really all you need to know, especially given the fact that Watson's actually turning these into meaningful targets again. So the fewest targets on the season was 8, and the next fewest after that is 12. And no one in the NFL is going to average 12 targets at the end of the season, probably not even Hopkins. But given that he's received that kind of consistent targeted usage throughout the early season here, leads me to believe that it's going to be really hard for them to change the approach. So, yeah, I think Hopkins is great. I mean, Fuller's cut into it a little bit. I think people are taking a hard look at Fuller right now just because the fantasy totals have been so high, but the target share really hasn't been there. Like, Fuller has 6 and then 3 targets against Kansas City. They are using him in the red zone. He's a good downfield threat, but he's not taking up Hopkins' short targets, which is where Hopkins is really buttering his bread right now. So yeah, I think Hopkins is a great play. I think we could see his price rise another 10% by the time the season's all said and done. and have him return back up into that, you know, where he used to be, in that Julio Jones, sort of Antonio Brown territory. Probably a tier below those guys, but definitely knocking on the door right now.
Great matchup against Cleveland as well. The next two guys I wrote up kind of fit the same profile. I think this week, if I were to make my cash games right now, I would prioritize targets and, you know, a high volume of targets in the mid-tier. Now, we usually do that anyway, but so there are times where we do want to target them in the very upper tier as well, like a la Antonio Brown. I'm not sure this is totally the week to do it with him getting a Marcus Peters treatment, but that, you know, that could change a little bit as we grade out some of the cornerback matchups. But the two guys I wrote up next were Larry Fitzgerald and Keenan Allen. You know, both guys a little bit older here. Fitzgerald specifically seems like he's been playing forever. The targets are still there. I mean, they signed Adrian Peterson. I think it's not going to matter at all for the running game. That offensive line stinks, and Peterson isn't good anyway, so I can't imagine. I mean, it's not going to be worse than Chris Johnson, but I can't imagine it's in many degrees better. That being said, you know, this is a team that needs to pass a lot. Fitzgerald is still by far the leading target guy on the team. You know, we can talk about his consistency, or, you know, how he's made at times in the past. His production has gotten worse as the season goes on, maybe because of his age. But where do you fit guys like Fitzgerald? And I also have Keenan Allen in that same group that are just seeing a lot of targets. The prices haven't moved so much because they haven't had like crazy breakout performances. And I think I'm just not sure what to make of like the lack of breakout performance here. Is because, are we getting a little bit of run bad? Are we still willing to just kind of take the targets and take the targets for what they are at this point? How do you feel about these guys in the mid-tier?
Yeah, I think Fitzgerald did have the breakout game against Dallas where he scored 27 fantasy points on 15 targets and 150 yards receiving. So, you know, we have sort of seen that breakout game from him, but I still think if you look at his general body of work, you do see that kind of like sort of average, kind of bad performance. Like, I think, I mean, the 1 week against Indianapolis, again, when we played him, you were devastated by his 3.6 fantasy points. I think other than that, you were kind of like, well, whatever, like, I'll take my beating on an 8 fantasy point performance and just kind of move on with my life. But I think if you just look at what you're going to get on him on average over the course of the season, you're going to get that relatively unexciting sort of 12 to 13 fantasy points a game. And that really has value. I mean, in a league, like I mentioned yesterday on the last week's breakdown podcast, when only one of the top 15 receivers translates from week to week in terms of total yardage, guys like Fitzgerald that are going to have that consistent target share are going to be valuable for your cash game purposes. Because the reality is, for cash games, you don't need to spike the 35-point performance. You just need to avoid zeros for the most part. And I think Fitzgerald and Allen will both help you do that. I think with a gun in my head, I'd pick Allen over Fitzgerald just because the targets have actually been higher and he's younger. And I think I perceive the upside to be higher. And just the fantasy points have been higher. So like, I really like everything about it. Granted, he's a little bit more expensive, but I think actually his role is a little bit more secure, especially given that the Cardinals are getting a little bit healthier with like John Brown back and things like that. So I think I'd take Allen there. I wouldn't mind playing both, but definitely like Allen a little bit better.
It's interesting when you look at the overall target leaders in the NFL right now. Brown is first. Then you get Hopkins, Allen, and Fitzgerald, the 2, 3, and 4. Now Hopkins is closer to Brown than he is to the next group. But then you get when you start going down the rest of the list, especially in terms of guys who are playing this week. So AJ Green's on a bye. Dez is on a bye. Garcon's in a bad matchup. Odell's done for the season. Thielen has no quarterback really because Bradford's not there. Then you need to go. You go a full 12. You knock that entire middle of the list out, and then you go a full 12 targets down to Golden Tate. Right? There's just a huge drop off in terms of how these teams are using these guys, and that's where I'm really kind of going to be targeting some of my. That's really why these guys stand out to me, especially on this week, is I don't need to break the bank for any of them, and if I can get any savings just anywhere else. Just even a little bit, like, you know, pay down a little quarterback, pay down a little bit of a tight end. I think roster, even all three of these guys in the middle of the lineup, looks pretty good. I'm gonna move along here because we're gonna start running along. But I wrote up Chris Hogan. I value Hogan under these guys that I mentioned above. A lot of his fantasy factoring in at this point has just come through the touchdown. He's getting targets, but he's just catching an insane amount of touchdowns now. Touchdowns are created equally for some and not for others. How willing are we to trust? Well, the reason I say it is because when Tom Brady has a red zone target, Tom Brady has a red zone target, right? Like, that's kind of his plan. If it was another quarterback, I'm not sure I'd be
versus like Case Keenum trying to jam it in three times on one possession to Diggs or whoever, right?
Right, exactly. Like, this is just not the same kind of situation. We've seen Brady, use get schemes they like down and close, and that's just the thing they do. Are we willing to kind of boost Hogan's value a little bit because it's Tom Brady throwing him these red zone targets?
I think so. I mean, you also get pretty consistent targets out of Hogan generally, and those are actually trending up. So I think there's a lot of positive indicators for Hogan right now. I think he's a good value at this price point. If you had to compare him just straight up to Keenan Allen, though, where would you go if you had to pick between those guys?
Oh, I would definitely pick Allen for cash games. It's not really close. I just wanted to kind of throw in another guy.
I think it's kind of close, though. I mean, like, the touchdowns really do matter. The Patriots are a better offense. And also just the fact that Hogan's converting a higher percentage of his targets, I think, means that the upside is arguably higher too. Like, you know, Allen's had a real difficult time converting more than 50% of his targets to receptions, and, you know, with Brady, Hogan's not really having that same issue.
No, yeah, and I did write this up, and I know you hate this, but Allen has drawn a really bad cornerback matchups to start the season.
I just don't want to make that excuse for guys we like when if they stink. That's all.
No, I totally agree with you. And right now, when you run FanDuel lineups, Hogan actually comes into a few more lineups than Allen does for a little bit more. So it is drawing. Our system is drawing. Maybe I always get a little bit worried when it draws on touchdowns as the way that you're going to be fantasy relevant going forward. But there are kind of edge cases that I'll make that I'll be okay with it. And when Tom Brady's your quarterback, and you know, and Hogan is kind of the red zone guy, then I'm kind of willing to just say maybe this is just going to be the case. All right, let's finish off with the tight end. In terms of consistency, no one's really been more consistent in the NFL this season than Zach Ertz. His coefficient of variation is a 0.16. That is completely unheard of for a tight end. Like, it just simply... Oh, no, excuse me, 0.12, even better. Completely unheard of for a tight... Really, it's unheard of for any position player. And for a tight end, it's really something. It's kind of just unbelievable. To have that kind of level of consistency through 5 weeks of a season from this position is, looking back at historical records, my guess is this has got to be the lowest. I bet you it's just like it could even be the lowest 5 week stretch for a tight end at any point ever. Yeah, I just don't think that, you know, at any point during any time of the season ever, like, I can't remember a tight end that's just kind of week in and week out kind of done this thing. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but kind of sum up your feelings on where we want to prioritize that level of consistency compared to the field or compared to the position with positional scarcity here. Would we be willing to pay down more at wide receiver to slot in his production on a week-to-week basis?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we would. We don't have to make that decision on the main slate this week, though. So, you know, I don't think we wind up...
Oh, shoot, I didn't even realize that. I wasn't even thinking.
Yeah, which is totally fine.
I was so excited to write up Ertz because of that stuff that I didn't even realize. Let's skip him. I that's my bad. I just made a mistake. I'll make a note in the article. By the time in these articles you get the tight end, your eyes are starting to go crossed because you're just there. Yeah,
okay. But there is a problem with tight ends on the main slate. Like, when we get down to... I think we're going to be much in the same boat where we were last week. Like, are we picking between Austin Seferian Jenkins and, you know, Cameron Brate and like these guys who are kind of like, you know, kind of there, kind of not, kind of coming and going, but maybe on the rise or they could disappear. I don't know. So after Ertz, then who were the guys you actually would be excited to see in the lineup?
None of them. I don't want to play any of these guys. I think that, like, I mean, I'm being serious. The tight end is such a problem. I think that the realistic scenario, and this is such a hedge answer, but I'm kind of fine saying it, is because a lot of these guys are priced right in the same range. I think if you subscribe to what I do and just kind of run multiple cash lineups, if you see there's very close decisions in place, I don't always do this. It's not 100% strategy for me. It kind of depends on the week. There's some weeks, you know, like week one of the NFL where I was just fine running the top lineup because it was basically like 100%. Like, the guys were just in 100% of lineups and there was a couple different decisions. Now, there are times to do it. And you know, a couple of ways you can do it too is you can switch your kicker around, which I think is completely fine. You switch your defense around a little bit, which I think is fine because I think the variance in those positions is even higher. But I think what you do this week is you take guys like Brate, Seferian Jenkins, Engram. I think you're going to see Ed Dixon, actually. He's not on the main slate either. I think you're going to see people play Kittle, though I'm not really willing to jump on that bandwagon completely yet. But I think you take these guys and you just make a couple different lineups and just understand that basically you're looking to get there on two of the three of them, if that makes sense, right? Like you're just saying, like, I want to get there. If I can get there on two-thirds of these guys, like sort of like Vegas gambling, where you're just like, look, I don't need to win 100%. I just need to kind of get to that 60% range, right? And like 61% or whatever it is. But like I think that is the scenario that I'll be taking here because I'm just not – going to go all
well, they're all the same guy. I don't know, right. Like, who could credibly look at the situation and say, you know, maybe I would give a slight nod to Cameron Brate there just because, you know, there's a little bit of track record. Things seem to be trending in the right direction. But, like, overall, like, they're all basically the same guy, the same question marks, all the same issues. And they're the same price, too. So you just pick between them, close your eyes, get there on half of them or don't, and hope that it just doesn't wind up making a difference. Because there's a decent chance when you hedge at one position like that, and then say you go between, say, running back, where you have a lot of good options across multiple different price points, then it just winds up not mattering and you just cash everything. But sometimes it does. Sometimes, like, we got the zero out of Evan Ingram last week. Did we love Evan Ingram? No. But if you spread out that ownership across multiple guys in the same sort of range, like Charles Clay or whomever.
Well, actually, the perfect example would have been last week. The perfect example from last week is this, and I didn't do it last week, and maybe this is why it's more on my mind now, is that the play there was to play Ingram, Witten, and Safarian Jenkins, right? Those are the three guys that our system sort of liked, all in that same price range, and the lineups were going to look basically the same, right? I think you were going to just change around your kicker,
exactly.
which doesn't matter at all. So I think if you do that, then you are in that 66% success rate on tight end. And
well, then you get the random touchdown from Jenkins. Like, he was basically the same, except he punched in that random touchdown. And that's just a 10. That was literally the difference between cashing and not. So, I'm with that approach 100%.
And then I just added a couple of defenses that were here. Denver Broncos obviously are going. Or it's like when Baylor face. Nah, that's not bad. It's like when Alabama faces like the second team on their schedule. That's kind of like the NFL equivalent of what's going on here with the Broncos facing the Giants. Redskins in a good spot against San Francisco. Ravens also in a good spot against the Bears. We'll have you. Those are all baked into our system too. So if you want to sign up, dfsr.com/NFL, you can check out all the projections that we have. Check out our player lab, which helps you filter through a bunch of different criteria as well when you're building lineups. Really helpful if you're looking for guys that have been, like, you know, low touchdown dependency or consistency ratings or defense versus, you know, the cornerback they're facing. That's all baked into that system, and you can filter through, I don't know, 15 to 20 different filters per position. Very helpful in building lineups. dfsr.com/NFL gets you that free 3-day trial, then just $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, you enjoy your long weekend watching your kids, and then I will pick up the slack and just do all the podcasts myself for the rest of the week. How's that sound?
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks.
Later.